Wisconsin's voter ID law gets struck down. Meanwhile, Governor Walker says there will not be a special legislative session to craft a new voter ID bill before the November elections. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will review those two stories and many more during this edition of The Week in Review. We have two guests with us from different perspectives, and we welcome your perspective too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. Happy to have with us Chris Lotto, former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign strategist or consultant. Good morning.
Pick your favorite. Good morning, Joy.
Yeah. And Christine Bremer-Moogley is with us, an attorney with Bremer and Trollop Law Offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Thanks to both of you for being in today. Well, let's talk first about the federal judge, Lynn Edelman, who found Wisconsin's voter ID law unconstitutional. Christine, what do you take away from his ruling?
Well, you know, if people would take the time to read his really excellent decision, 90 pages worth, they would see how much effort was put into the work of these lawyers that came before him to challenge this law, and would realize that the evidence that he received and that he really articulately outlines in his decision was overwhelming with regard to the reasons for, you know, undoing this law and putting a permanent injunction on it. You know, the whole purpose of this law was to really stop voter impersonation. And after hearing, you know, days of testimony, months of testimony, you know, Judge Edelman found that there was actually no evidence put on by the Attorney General's office of voter impersonation. And so if there is no evidence of voter impersonation, there is no real state interest in passing a law that discriminates against people of color and Latinos and blacks, especially in people of low income, to prevent them from voting. So, you know, I think when you read the decision and read the evidence and the burdens that were placed on people to try to get a voter ID, you come away from it and you realize it was just a fine piece of work, a fine piece of scholarship. He applied the law of the United States, and he did something that no other state court has done across the nation, which was to look at these voter ID programs, these voter ID programs, and these laws that have been passed across over 30 states, and apply the Voting Rights Act to them to really determine if there was a discriminatory effect on people who are, you know, subject to discrimination, people of color and low income. And he found, based on volumes of evidence, that there was. And so for the first time, we have a really scholarly judge, Lynn Edelman, who has taken the time to put together and listen to a great record that was put forward by the plaintiffs to show the effect of this law on the people of our state.
Let's get Chris Lotto to congratulate him. Let's get Chris Lotto's reaction to the ruling, and we have other things to talk about too.
Sure. I mean, first of all, Lynn Edelman is known as an activist judge. He's known as a very liberal judge. This is not a particularly surprising decision on his part. Certainly, the bottom line aspect of it, as Christine points out, it's a fairly detailed ruling. You know, where do things go from here? Attorney General Van Hollen has said he's going to appeal. Voter ID is by no means dead yet. You know, in reading some of the reaction to the decision this week, there have been some on the more conservative side of the aisle who have said that, you know, his decision, Edelman's decision, rests in part on the notion that any photo ID requirement is too burdensome, potentially actionable under the Voting Rights Act, as it could predominantly affect minority voters. So while it may be a challenge for some to get voter ID, I think, you know, we'd all agree that it's not impossible to get voter ID. I mean, the very act of voting in person when you go to the polls is burdensome. You take time out of your day, you have to travel to get there, you wait in line, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, ultimately, it's unclear how much federal courts are going to want to, as we go through the appeals process, how much they're going to want to assert their themselves in state election law on appeal. So we're going to have to wait and see on that. Edelman in his decision obviously, you know, doesn't see a problem with voter impersonation, voter fraud. He did not indicate that there are any technical issues with the current law that could be fixed. He's basically saying there is just no need for voter ID, period. So Republican leaders, and we just heard from Governor Walker yesterday saying there's not going to be a special session. It's not surprising. The Republican leaders, after saying they were going to do that, have been walking that back for, you know, the rest of this week. Timing issues. There's cases appealing before the state Supreme Court. There's a realization that no matter what is put in front of Judge Edelman is probably not going to be enough for him. So there are other ideas on the table as well. You know, whether to amend state law to have those without photo ID sign an affidavit stating they were unable to get the required ID. There are other proposals out there. Something like that is obviously weaker than the original law, but ultimately maybe better than nothing. But we'll also have to see where the appeals process goes from here.
You know, Governor Walker, when he said that there was not going to be a special session to craft a new voter ID law, did say that even if there's just one fraudulent vote, that's a problem. What about his argument on that, Christine?
Well, you know, that's the problem, that there was evidence of only one case in over 650,000 voters, registered voters in Milwaukee County. There was one case where a man whose recently deceased wife had an absentee ballot, and that was put forward, and that was the only case of voter impersonation that they could come up with. So when you think about what Governor Walker said, you know, if we're going to disenfranchise, according to the testimony, potentially 300,000 people, 300,000 people versus one person who might put forward an absentee ballot, which is really the only way this fraud could take place, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. This isn't about voter fraud. This is about preventing people from getting to the polls. And that's really what it's about. It's not about tweaking a bill or finding a way to prevent voter fraud, because there isn't any evidence of it. And so when there isn't any evidence of it, you have to look for the other reasons. And there isn't any good state interest that is advanced by this bill. And so they can't come up with anything. The real problem with this, Joy, is that when you have Governor Walker and the leader of the assembly saying that there's an issue with voter fraud in our country and in our state, it takes away voter confidence in the election process. And that's something that Judge Edelman discussed in his opinion. And so, you know, it's really unfortunate that our governor talks about there being voter fraud in our state when there is absolutely no evidence of it.
Chris, can't the legislature just draft a law that's exactly the same as one of the other states that have had their voter IDs laws deemed constitutional?
Sure, they could, and that may ultimately, you know, end up being what happens. I mean, I think, you know, to go back to the larger argument that Christine brought up, from the perspective of those who support voter ID at the polls, it has always been about protecting the integrity of the vote. Your vote, my vote, every individual's vote, and making sure that those votes count. And this has long been seen, and a wide majority of Wisconsinites have long believed this as well, and poll after poll has shown this, that this is a reasonable attempt, a common sense attempt, to protect the integrity of the polls by asking someone to show a photo ID. You know, it's virtually impossible to function in society without having a photo ID. It's a very reasonable thing to expect at the polls. So I think what you need to see now, Joy, to your point, there is that possibility, I think. As I said earlier, there are other ideas floating around out there as well. I think depending on how the appeals process goes, we're not going to see any more action on it this year, pending court decisions, the Supreme Court, any other appeals or anything like that. So it's going to be up to, you know, apparently a new legislature to regather after the November elections and make some decisions about where to go from here.
And Christine?
Sorry, I just want one further comment on that. You know, to talk about that it's really reasonable that everyone has voter ID or citizenship documents to get a voter ID is just false. The Brennan Institute has indicated that there are 13 million people in our country without access to their citizenship documents. So it's easy for people that are in the middle class and that have access to credit cards and jobs and homes and all the documents that we need to go through our life to say that we all have that. But low-income people don't have it. And if you would take the time, if people would take the time to read some of the testimony and read the evidence that is summarized in the judge's opinion, you'd see that this has a disproportionate effect on low-income people. And there was lots of evidence to that in the case. So I think it's wrong just to say everybody has access, because they don't.
And there's this assumption here in the decision that somehow low-income people are less responsible and wouldn't want to take action on this, and that they somehow need some sort of protection because they can't handle it. And I think that there's something offensive about that they wouldn't be able to go and get that ID and be able to get that done. Now, if there's a problem at the governmental level where it's too difficult, too burdensome, too bureaucratic to access ID, well, then that's another issue that has to be taken care of.
Well, right, and if you read the decision, you'd see the efforts that were made by people of low income to get their IDs. It wasn't that they need to be protected, but they need to be protected from the bureaucracy. You know, one of the things you have to do is go to a DMV to get your ID. And if you look at the decision, you see that in Wisconsin, there's only two DMVs that are open after 5 o'clock. One in the whole state that's open on Saturdays. And in many counties, the DMVs are located out in the rural areas, so that people that don't have cars don't have access to get there. And so it's a very big burden for people. And the law does not allow there to be a burden on the right to vote.
Hold on. We are talking about the news of the week with our two guests from different perspectives, Christine Bremer-Moogley and Chris Lotto. And we will welcome your voice into this conversation as well at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Right now we're talking about the voter ID developments in Wisconsin, but we'll move on and talk about other top state and national issues in the news this week. But first, this is the last weekday of our spring membership drive. Your last opportunity, your only opportunity during this spring membership drive to pledge during the week in review. I'm Joy Cardine, and John Munson joins for a few minutes to encourage you to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, good morning again, Joy. Last hour, we heard from 45 of you. Great news there. Now this hour, we have a goal of getting 40 more people to make their support known to Wisconsin Public Radio. These goals are set up to make sure that we have the money to pay for the programs you rely on and programs you enjoy, like the Week in Review. This is the last hour to pledge in support of the Joy Cardine Show. Help us meet this hourly goal with your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you are wondering what your pledge pays for, well, of course, we have the toll-free numbers, so you can call in your question or state your view. We rely on subscriptions and internet services and other things so we can research the topics of the day.
And these things all cost money, and there are many more besides. We can't even list them all. Your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 helps us pay for them.
It's really easy to give to Wisconsin Public Radio. We just need your name, contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you'd like to pay for it.
Well, that's right. And you can make a one-time gift or, better yet, start automatic sustaining donations directly from your bank account. Here's the key. You choose how to give, and then you do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I would ask you, if you're a listener, you know, why do you listen? And if you're listening now, then you want to be listening in the future. And if you've listened in the past and the future rolls around and it's not there, you won't have anything to listen to.
And I guess I would tell you that it's NPR and WPR, National Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Radio. And you are its public. And the funding for WPR and NPR comes from you.
I'm Larry.
I'm Ellie.
And we're from Madison, Wisconsin.
And please join us as sustaining members of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I listen to public radio and I'm a sustaining member. That's kind of cool.
You can make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with John Munson, looking for 37 pledges between now and the top of the hour at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, here's an idea. When you make your pledge, ask for our 2014 Artist Mug with your pledge today. It was designed by Renee Grafe, a nationally known illustrator from Cedarburg, Wisconsin.
And you can have that mug for your pledge of $12.50 a month or a $150 pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. I do love this mug. It's got a bunch of cartoon animals who are running the radio station and listening to the radio station. So animal lovers, rejoice and enjoy your next cup of tea or coffee in the Wisconsin Public Radio mug.
I see one of them is a badger, too.
There is a badger.
Yeah,
and there's a cat, the important cat.
There we go.
WPR.org.
Well, it's Facebook friendly then, right?
WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you to Barbara in Green Bay who says, I am a daily listener. Thank
Yay.
You for the worthwhile news and discussions.
Thank you. Barbara,
we appreciate your pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks very much, John, for being here. We'll talk to you later. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review, talking this week to Chris Lotto, former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, who is one of Wisconsin's presidential electors and an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. And, you know, there is other voting-related news. State Representative Therese Brousseau joined us this week to say it's time for the state to implement online voter registration. Chris, is this something that the state ought to do?
Well, I think, first of all, most importantly, I have to point out that this mug is adorable. So I love it. I'm like, oh, this is great.
I saw you admiring that.
Yeah, I was checking it out. It's very nice, very nice. So get out there and get some pledges for that. It's cute. Okay, so the issue at hand, online voter registration. It's not going to happen this year. We have a number of states that have already done it. More are heading down that road. I would imagine that Wisconsin at some point is going to do that. I don't think there is a major concern, at least at this time, that we're going to start lagging behind in terms of voting. Wisconsin already has among, you know, the most liberal voter registration laws in the nation. So I would say we're fairly well covered as it is. But eventually, assuming that, you know, the proper procedures are in place to, again, you know, protect against fraud, protect against impersonation and things like that, that's something that surely Wisconsin is going to be moving towards.
Yeah, she was concerned that Republicans might swap their support for online voter registration with getting rid of same-day in-person voter registration. Christine, do you share that concern or not?
Yes, I would really share it. You know, I've served as an election judge. I've been a poll watcher. I've served in boiler rooms on election day and listened to problems across the state, of which there were very few. But same-day registration is so important to our state. You know, there's so many people that come in on the day of the election and register. I think even Governor Walker's own sons did. So we cannot do away with that. That's one of the hallmarks of Wisconsin's open and successful turnouts and on election day. So I pray that doesn't happen. I think online registration is a great idea, and the cost, you know, that's cited is like $600,000, which, although it isn't chump change, when you look at the total cost of elections in Wisconsin, I think it was $10 million for our last general election. So in terms of the total cost of elections, $600,000, which would allow a program that would take place over many years, it's just good public policy. So I really agree that we should do it, and I hope, and I think you're right, Chris, it won't happen this year, but I hope that I hope they can get it done. It's one thing that should come through on a bipartisan basis.
How do you see, Christine, that the whole I'm going back to voter ID because I didn't really get your I guess your prediction as to what's going to happen with the Wisconsin voter ID situation.
Well, I mean, if you follow what's going to happen, I think our Attorney General, even though people are encouraging him not to do it, is going to take this up on appeal. You know, it's interesting because Eric Holden spoke to the National Associations of Attorneys General, of which our Attorney General is the president right now, and was introduced by Van Hollen. And then Holden got up and said, attorneys general should not try to defend laws that are unconstitutional or that have a discriminatory outcome. And yet, Van Hollen now appears that he's going to do so anyway. So if he goes to the Seventh Circuit, what's going to happen? Well, I think we don't know what the panel will be. There will be three judges that hear it. They're picked by lot, so we don't know exactly who would hear it. But if we look at the recent writings of Judge Posner, who was very much in the majority on the Indiana, on the case that upheld the Indiana voter ID law, you know, he's come to a different conclusion on the reasons for voter ID, and he has now written that he believes that some of the reasoning behind this and some of the thought behind voter ID law is for voter suppression. So I think, and also one of the problems with the Indiana law that was brought before the Seventh Circuit was there was no record on the underlying trial court of the effects of the discriminatory effects of the laws on the people. So I think if it goes forward, it'll be a totally different record, lots of evidence, and I think that the voter ID law in Wisconsin will be stricken permanently.
Chris?
I think it's impossible to say. I think you have one judge, Lynn Edelman, liberal activist judge, who's decided that it's unconstitutional, and I certainly don't have to school Christine on how the law works. Now you appeal that decision, and it continues to make its way through the court system. So I don't think there's any way to say for certain what's going to happen, whether it's going to be struck down permanently or not, but that's why there's an appeals process in place.
This is the Week in Review. I have to jump in. I'm sorry, Christine. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine with Christine Bremer-Moogley and Chris Lotto here on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine with Chris Lotto and Christine Bremer-Moogley talking about the top stories in state and national politics during this edition of the Week in Review. We need to move on to some other issues, as there are many to cover in this pledge drive edition of the Week in Review. State Republicans are gathering in Milwaukee this weekend for the state's annual convention. A couple of interesting resolutions that are expected to be voted on, including whether Wisconsin should have the right to secede. Governor Walker and other Republicans have distanced themselves from that resolution. But, Chris, what's going to happen with this secession thing?
Well, hopefully it'll die quickly, and a clear large majority of the delegates on hand will make sure that that happens. It's something goofy. It's frankly kind of a black eye on the party. You know, anybody who is an observer of conventions knows that, and this happens on both sides, that there's occasionally a little bit of wackiness, a little bit of goofiness buried among these resolutions. This one, frankly, got further than it should have, and I think it is a bit of a black eye on the party. It's obviously gotten national attention. Governor Walker, among others, have stepped way back from it, but here it is, and it's made it through. So it's going to be up to the delegates this weekend to eliminate it, basically. I mean, this is really something that should have been sort of the first big step forward toward reelecting Scott Walker, getting a new Republican attorney general in place, going up and down the ticket. And this is one of those, you know, speed bumps that has, party leaders reaching for the Pepto-Bismol. But I think it's going to go away rather quickly.
It's a speed bump, Christine.
Well, I hope it doesn't go away rather quickly.
Of course.
You know, it seems to me to be a play to the Bundy crowd. I think that, you got to remember that it's not just secession, but also nullification that they're looking at. And so we've got a man who's being talked up as a potential contender for our next president, with people behind him and his party and his state talking about allowing our state to nullify federal law, including any executive action of the president. It's really odd. You know, I go to these state party conventions and work on resolutions, and I know, and I've seen the weirdness as well. As you've said, Chris, it does happen, but it stopped at the first level. It's just amazing that this got through. It just shows that the party has some real wacky people that are coming forward, and they're getting a voice. They're being allowed to come forward with these crazy ideas, secession from the United States. I mean, it's just outrageous. It's almost treason to talk about it. We fought a war over this.
You could make the argument that the party is being inclusive by allowing all of these voices to be heard. I'm not going to make that argument, but you could make that argument.
That's a good try, but, I guess that's really not something that you want to include in any party, but treason. Yeah. So I think that we should, I hope that they do the right thing and get away from it. I think Brett Halsey's going to cause a little excitement. I saw that he's going to come with hoods.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's going to be some excitement at this convention, so maybe it'll be entertaining if nothing else.
Speaking of Brett Halsey, yes, State Representative Brett Halsey, who has declared that he is going to run for governor as a Democrat, says that he is going to try to hand out Ku Klux Klan hoods to Republicans at the convention to highlight what he calls their racist policies. Well, Christine, is that a stunt that you endorse, or is this going way too far?
Well, you know, he's making the hoods out of recyclable material.
The environmentalist in him.
Yeah, you know, so when we talk about politics being entertaining, I guess this is. No, I think Ku Klux Klan hoods, you know, isn't something that anybody would endorse him doing. He's just trying to show in his way why he is opposed to these tactics on the Republican side. So, as Chris said, you know, the conventions bring out some weirdness, but I think it is important that people realize that this resolution got forward strong enough and was passed through, not stopped by any leaders in the Republican Party in the district where it came out of, and it's to succeed and nullify, secede from the union and to nullify federal law. So it's important to keep in mind that there are some people that really believe that. So we have to, you know, take credence to it and make certain we're aware of it.
What's your reaction to Brett Halsey passing out KKK-like hoods at the Republican convention, Chris?
Well, luckily there's no law against acting like a buffoon. Otherwise, they'd have to lock him up and throw away the key. This is idiotic, with a capital I. And, you know, and this is one of your Democrat candidates for governor, Christine. So will you be putting your yard sign out supporting Brett? Or
I'm in the Burke camp. Let's be clear on that.
To Christine's, you know, point that there is this kind of stuff on both sides. But I think that most people, including a fair number of Democrats, I think would condemn this as being a step too far, that it crosses the line into just being offensive, not to mention stupid.
Do you give Brett Halsey any shot at the Democratic nomination for governor, Christine?
No.
That's enough?
No, I think he is, you know, he's entertaining, you know, and for people that like, you know, blood in the water, when they're listening to people talk about candidates, they enjoy listening to him. But, you know, if we're talking about responsible leadership and someone who is absolutely qualified to lead this state and who by even a very conservative Liberty Foundation poll is in a dead heat with Scott Walker this week's poll, Mary Burke is the candidate who will win the governorship. And so, you know, I think Brett Halsey is entertaining. I think he has a lot of anger in him with regard, and rightfully so, in regard to what's happened in the past year since Scott Walker's been our governor. And so the people that like to listen to his fighting words enjoy that. But when we're talking about who is the responsible leader who will take our state forward and heal the state, there's only one person, and that's Mary Burke.
I think you're right in the sense that Mary Burke will, and her many, many millions will be able to effectively quash any competition in the primary. However, in November, it'll still be Scott Walker.
Yeah, let's go to John in Burlington. Hi, John.
I was listening, and I heard the thing about the hoods. And ironically, before that, my thought was, you know, the clip of Walker saying that we're being prejudiced in assuming that minorities and poor people can't muster up the money or the energy to register to vote or to get an ID. I think it just shows that the Republican Party just doesn't even attempt to fake an interest in representing minorities. It's that stuff. It's Glenn Grossman, and it's just this, you know, Milwaukee really doesn't exist, and Walker is Wisconsin.
Well, Republicans really don't care about minorities, John says. Chris, what's your reaction?
Yeah, I think the caller was throwing a whole lot at the wall to see what would stick. It's just absurd on its face. I mean, this Brett Halsey stunt. Let's first of all, I guess we're kind of wandering off point here. It's ridiculous. It's offensive. It has no place at either convention. If a Republican were doing something similarly tasteless at the Democrat convention, I'd be condemning that as well. So the idea that we would even sort of praise Brett Halsey's anger and that it's righteous is fairly ridiculous as well. That's simply not true. It's one of those rubrics like, you know, the Koch brothers are behind everything that happens in the state that a Republican is affiliated with, that folks like to throw out as a smokescreen. But there's, you know, there's nothing behind it.
A quick reaction, Christine?
Well, I've been at many Democratic conventions, Chris, and there's lots of tasteless things that Republicans do that are not condemned. So I'd have to say I disagree with you in that regard. But I think John makes a good point, that is that, you know, there is no evidence, if you read the decision and the evidence that came forward in that case, there is no evidence that that the issue of low-income people and minorities and the disproportionate effect this law is going to have on them was even taken into consideration by the Republicans. And if Scott Walker thinks that this law is based on nothing, I think he should take the time and read the 90-page decision, and maybe he'll come away with a different outlook.
More of our Week in Review coming up. But first, I'm Joy Cardine with John Munson, because this is the last weekday of the spring membership drive and your last opportunity to make a pledge during the drive to this show. We are here to ask for you to invest a few minutes of your time to support programs you rely on, like the Week in Review. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, Joy, we need 33 more pledges in the next 20 minutes or so to stay on track. Your pledge right now helps pay for programs like the Joy Cardine Show that you count on all year long. And thank you so much to the many people who've already given during this pledge drive. If you're not one of them, your time is now. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Every day our team works really hard to bring you a great morning of radio. And that's a pleasure because we know that that you are curious and intelligent and participate in these programs. But we also know that you like to have fun and enjoy all that Wisconsin has to offer.
Well, and thank you for being a great audience. And, well, really, you're the reason that we do what we do. Well, you can give us one more thing this morning, your financial support. Your support is what makes these mornings possible. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio wakes me up every morning. Mostly I just enjoy the morning programming and the afternoon programming. I became a sustaining member because I felt so guilty with all the pledge drives, because they're so logical and they're so persistent. It's crucial that we have people support it so we don't lose it. I'm Sarah from Wausau. Join me as a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Joy Cardine with John Munson, encouraging you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We still need 32 pledges to make our goal this hour on this last day of the spring pledge drive. John, I think that people should pledge $12.50 a month or $150 to get that wonderful mug.
Well, I think they should, too. I would be a fool to not agree. I mean, after all, it's your show. This is a lovely mug. It was designed by an artist right here in our neighborhood in Wisconsin, and it is it's so cute. It'll look great on your desk or on your kitchen counter. You'll be the coolest kid in your neighborhood when you have this mug, and you can get it for a pledge of $12.50 a month, $150 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Jennifer from Milwaukee, who says, I spend my weekends on mini road trips with my fiance, and Wisconsin Public Radio is a large part of that. Thank you very much, Jennifer, for your pledge. Won't you join her and the 50,000 plus others who are supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio by making a pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks very much, John. We'll hear from you at the end of the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. Wisconsin is well known for its cheese and brats and beer, but soon we may be able to add an unlikely source of seafood to that list. What kind of seafood is being farmed indoors in Wisconsin for the first time? So what kind of seafood is being farmed indoors in Wisconsin for the first time? 1-800-642-1234 if you think you know. You can also email your answer to talk@wpr.org. We're going to give you 5 minutes to participate in the Week in Review quiz. We'll announce the answer and the winner at the end of the program. Talking during this edition of the Week in Review with our two guests from different perspectives, Christine Bremer-Moogley is an attorney with Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau and one of Wisconsin's presidential electors, and Chris Lotto is a former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and is a GOP campaign consultant. And we are reviewing the top news stories of the week. Well, let's see. Well, let's talk a little bit about last week. Paul Ryan met with the Black Caucus in a private meeting to talk about comments that he made about poverty and inner cities that stirred allegations of racism. He said on Wednesday that he was at a hearing that focused on poverty issues in his capacity as House Budget Committee Chair. I don't know, Chris, your reaction to what's going on with Paul Ryan. Are those comments going to continue to haunt him, or is he going to smooth things over?
I think ultimately no. I mean, Paul Ryan is no stranger to controversy, and by you know, being in the position that he is in Congress, and obviously having run for vice president in 2012, he's used to being, figuratively speaking, in the crosshairs. So, you know, poverty is one of those issues that you have to, you know, tread lightly and be aware of and sensitive to, you know, those who are struggling and making sure that, you know, you are looking at policies that are going to be effective in combating poverty and giving folks a, you know, a hand up instead of a handout. That's surely the Ryan approach to things. So, you know, sometimes you can say things when discussing these issues that some may take as racist or bigoted or, you know, whatever the criticisms are. Obviously, by meeting with the Black Caucus, he's trying to reach out and smooth things over. And I think he will do that. I think that the larger issue is one of dealing with those policies that are in place and how we move forward from here and how Paul Ryan takes what he's hearing from the Black Caucus and from these hearings and folds it into a policy that folks can accept.
Mm-hmm. Christine?
I think when Paul Ryan made his what he calls inarticulate comments about the culture of our inner cities with men not working and generations of men not thinking about working, you know, he put forward something that really caused people to see where they thought his heart really was. And when you looked at his budget that he proposed, you know, he was talking about cutting $4.8 trillion in spending. And of that, I think it was something like close to 70% would come from programs that serve low-income people. So, you know, it's just hard to understand where he's coming from in this regard. Everyone agrees that poverty is something that crosses racial lines. But when you make comments like that, you know, then you have a guy like Bundy almost echoing that when he made his comments about race. You know, people sitting on porches and not wanting to work. You know, it's this terrible kind of theme that's coming through from the Republican side of things that has no place in our discourse. And I'm really glad that, and I'm sure everyone is, that Ryan is talking to the Black Caucus. I don't think they came to any conclusions. They came to agree that they disagree on how to handle the issue of poverty. But taking away the safety net from people is certainly not the way the majority of Americans believe that we should take care of our own.
You know, speaking of race. Los Angeles Clippers owner Donald Sterling was hit with a lifetime ban, a $2.5 million fine from the NBA for racist comments that he made in an audio recording. Also might be forced to sell the team. So was this the right thing for the NBA to do, Christine?
I was hoping you'd ask Chris that third question.
I'm happy to jump in if you want.
Go ahead, Chris. You go first.
Well, the NBA is big business, and the reaction was obviously very swift, not only within the NBA community, as it were, but outside of it as well. That the comments were offensive. Donald Sterling is certainly guilty of being a first-class jerk and very apparently a bigot based on this and a number of other things, actions and comments that he's made over the years. You know, and that's the thing that sort of troubles me a little bit about all this is that his record of being kind of a bigot is really pretty long. And it certainly predates this latest incident. I mean, he's been sued over issues related to race and how he handles things in the past. So, you know, the reaction was swift and decisive that Donald Sterling had to go. You know, the whole case, though, is filled with these fascinating little detours, too, as you start to peel it back a little bit. You know, why was the Los Angeles NAACP still honoring this guy with awards as recently as a few years ago? And he was up for another award he was going to get, I think, this month.
Yeah.
You know, the tape that sparked this whole affair, and I'd be interested in getting Christine's take on this, you know, was this recorded illegally? I mean, I think in California, both parties, when you're being taped, have to give consent to being recorded. So how did this all come to light? I mean, that whole idea of there's no presumption of privacy in any setting anymore is got to be a little troubling to some people. But that said, genie's out of the bottle. He made the comments. He's not walking him back. The only question now is how the NBA moves to get him to sell the team and do the other things that they said they want him to do.
Mm-hmm. Christine?
Well, you know, that's why I let Chris go first, because I thought I might agree with him on this. And,
what?
I do. You know, I think it's very odd that these comments were the last straw. I mean, this guy was a nightmare for a long time, and why didn't they do something before? So I think the NBA acting quickly is very impressive, but really, as you said, when you peel back the onion skins, you see that there's a lot to this. I think that the story on this tape was that his girlfriend taped conversation between the two of them, and because she's now being sued by this guy's wife, because she wants some of the gifts he gave her back, like a $1 million condo and cars and stuff, that she wanted to protect herself. She was 31 years old, and for some reason she got involved with this loser. But, you know, I think that all of it is going to be a lot of lawsuits, and it's going to take the NBA a long time to fight him, because I understand he's extremely litigious, has lawyers that love to fight, and he's not going to give up.
Well, we have to wrap things up. Maybe I'll, very briefly, what are some things you're going to be watching for, Chris Lotto, at the Republican, the GOP convention in Wisconsin this week?
Sure. It's going to be, you know, a matter of, you know, at the top of the ticket, there's not going to be any surprises, obviously. This is really Scott Walker's show and the first sort of push forward toward November. So there's going to be that in the race for Attorney General. Brad Schimmel will, you know, be the one, I think, that delegates will support, obviously. I think the interesting things to watch are kind of bubbling up, you know, in other areas of the ticket and down ticket in legislative races, with some long time legislators stepping down and some newer guys stepping up. I think the Tom Petri, Congressman Petri, leaving, and that opens up a whole race with, you know, at least three Republican candidates and some good qualified candidates out there that are going to be vying for attention. So things really in the last couple of weeks have really been shaken up in a lot of ways in politics in Wisconsin, and it's going to be a fun thing to watch.
Well, we'll leave it there for now. We'll be following up on the GOP convention on our state capitol report on Monday as well. Chris Lotto, Christine Bremer-Moogly, thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great convention.
Thanks very much to both of our guests, and thank you for listening. Oh, I'm sorry. We should also announce that Tracy is the winner of our Week in Review quiz. Congratulations, Tracy. We asked what kind of seafood is now being farmed indoors in Wisconsin for the first time, and it's shrimp. So there's a farm in Wesby right in the middle of organic food. Happy Kickapoo Valley. WPR reported on this earlier in the week. So shrimp being farmed indoors in Wisconsin. Congratulations to Tracy. Well, John Munson joins me for the last few minutes of the program. This is the last push for you to make your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio. John, please tell me that we're doing okay.
We're doing okay.
Good.
Oh, okay, you asked me to tell you that. Yeah. Well, you know what? We need 21 more pledges this hour to continue to be okay, but we have had an awesome morning. It's just been great. We've had a lot of people show us some love here, and we need you to be the next person to do that. Help us pay for the programs you depend on, the programs you enjoy. Tomorrow is the last day of the drive, but this is your last opportunity to show your support for the Joy Cardine Show and programs like The Week in Review. So 21 more pledges in the next 4 or 5 minutes or so. Make yours the next at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, I really enjoy our Week in Review and talking to great guests like Chris Lotto and Christine Bremer-Moogley. We have sort of a rotating stable of regulars who come in for the Week in Reviews from different perspectives.
And, well, it's certainly one of the most popular hours of the week. If you look at our listener numbers, people love this 8 o'clock hour. Now we need those people who love this 8 o'clock hour to make their pledge.
And make that pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Help us reach this goal of 40 calls, 40 pledges during this last day of our spring pledge drive.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life has enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the host and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
You can make your donation to support the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Joy Cardine with John Munson asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio on this last weekday of our spring membership drive. You decide how much to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, but please do make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, and you know, it only takes a couple of minutes. We're just asking for a couple of minutes of your time and a gift of any amount. Hey, how about $10 a month?
That works out. That donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs. So show your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
You know, we hear a lot about quality of life here in Wisconsin. We've got great state parks, a respected university system, wonderful libraries. Well, Wisconsin Public Radio is another part of that quality of life here in the Badger State.
On Wisconsin Public Radio, you enjoy lively discussions, in-depth news, great music and entertainment. Help pay for that variety that you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio with your donation right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Joy, we're making some progress. We need
18 now.
Mm-hmm. It just flipped over again, so we're gathering some momentum here at the end of the hour. Make your pledge next. Your contribution at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
If you have never pledged to Wisconsin Public Radio before, you will find out how easy it is and how good it feels.
Oh, it feels great. It feels great to support something you love, something you use and rely on every day. Put your money where your values are. When you make your first ever pledge, how about $5 a month to start, or whatever amount is right for you? WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you to Elaine from Madison, who says that I have been a member for about 3 years now, and I intend to keep contributing. I love your weekday, early morning and evening programs as I make my work commute. Well, thank you so much, Elaine. Happy to keep you company and keep you informed on your commute. Join Elaine and many others with your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let's get those 18 pledges in the next couple of minutes and make all 3 hours of our goal for the Joy Cardine program this morning. You be next at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
Thank you so much. If you're already a supporter of Wisconsin Public Radio or a sustainer, or if you've already called in your pledge, but time still for you to make that step, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.